This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. I'm Sally Sara. This Monday, could it be time to rethink your holiday travel as a COVID outbreak in South Australia puts Christmas plans in jeopardy and people going without food and taking out risky loans to service already crippling debts? The vicious cycle of buy now, pay later schemes.
One in five people have missed a payment, and that has meant real harm. People having to miss things like food, they've taken out payday loans. This is causing real harm to people, and we are seeing this every day in financial counselling.
First today, we take you to Adelaide, and national plans to allow family and friends to reunite this Christmas are under serious threat as South Australia's COVID outbreak threatens to spread. Adelaide now has 17 community transmitted cases from the cluster linked to a hotel quarantine worker. WA, the Northern Territory and Tasmania are now forcing South Australian arrivals to quarantine. Caroline Winter begins our coverage.
A tense time that will have serious implications not just for South Australia but the entire country.
I think we're going to have a very anxious 24, 48 hours in South Australia. This is a very dangerous situation. Time is of the essence.
17 cases have now been found, all linked to a hotel quarantine worker. Premier Stephen Marshall says hundreds of people have now been put into isolation, and he's confident the state will get on top of this cluster.
If we work cooperatively with SA Health and SA Police on this one, we should get on top of it. But it's really a very worrying situation and we must act very swiftly.
From four cases yesterday, including an 80-year-old woman who tested positive at a hospital in Adelaide's north, others infected include two aged care workers, a prison worker, school student, fast food restaurant worker and a quarantine hotel worker. All of the cases, bar two, are linked to the same family. Chief Public Health Officer Nicola Spurrier says it's very clear where the cluster originated.
We haven't got the genomics yet, but I'm absolutely certain it has come from a Medi hotel.
Echoes of Victoria's experience with quarantine hotels and a second wave there will have spooked authorities. Mandatory testing every 7 days has been put in place for all staff and guests at all Medi hotels. Professor Spurrier says she's cancelled today's international flight into Adelaide and it's likely more will follow later this week.
Our Medi hotel process has been reviewed by the national team and we really did come out on top on that. But I've had some concerns over the last couple of weeks, not because of our process, but because of the number of positive cases we've had in those Medi hotels. And it just increases the risk of it getting out.
An aged care home is now in lockdown, while two schools, the fast food outlet and a supermarket have been closed.
All of the aged care facilities have outbreak plans in place, and an important part of that is contacting loved ones and relatives. So that would be absolutely my understanding that would have happened already.
COVID-positive patients are either in hospital or Medi hotels, while anyone with symptoms is being urged to get tested, with some already waiting up to 2 hours at drive-in testing clinics. Other states and territories have already begun restricting travellers from South Australia from entering. Police Commissioner Grant Stevens says that's their prerogative.
We've made the same sorts of calls and given the same considerations to other jurisdictions when they've had clusters that have arisen. Thankfully, we have not had to make those moves, but it's completely understandable that other jurisdictions will be watching us very closely to see how we go, and whatever decisions they make would be understandable in the circumstances.
And while he's confident South Australia's contact tracing will help the state, he hasn't ruled out imposing restrictions internally.
Unfortunately, depending on how significant this spread is, we could be talking about quite wide restrictions that we saw back in March, April. But that's worst case scenario and it's not a decision that has to be made right now, but we certainly have to be thinking about what the possibilities are.
Something that has South Australians holding their collective breath as the next 24 to 48 hours unfold.
That's Caroline Winter reporting from Adelaide. Well, just last week, all states and territories except WA agreed to open their borders to travel by Christmas. So with the South Australian outbreak, can and should that plan go ahead? Isabel Rowe reports.
Less than 24 hours has passed since the discovery of a COVID cluster in Adelaide, and already states are slamming their doors shut to South Australians.
It's what we don't know that worries us the most. Given this, we are declaring South Australia a hotspot for the purposes of travel to Northern Territory, effective immediately.
Northern Territory Chief Minister Michael Gunner says all South Australians entering the Territory today must quarantine for 14 days. Tasmanian Premier Peter Gutwin has gone a step further, applying the restrictions to those who've already arrived.
Look, as I've said right through this, the health and safety of Tasmanians is our top priority. With the outbreak escalating in Adelaide, we're taking immediate precautionary action this morning. To anyone who has arrived in Tasmania from South Australia since last Monday, the 9th of November, we would like you today to immediately self-isolate. If you are in a home residence, to isolate there.
Queensland will only require those from Adelaide to quarantine from midnight tonight, and Victoria has promised to interview and potentially test all travellers from Adelaide until further notice. Western Australia was the first state to impose restrictions. Last night, it put a plane load of South Australians into quarantine as soon as they'd arrived in the state, less than 48 hours after the border opened. The Federal Health Minister, Greg Hunt, doesn't think it's necessary.
We don't have any advice from the Chief Medical Officer that there's a base for any state or territory not to be open to any state or territory at this time.
And New South Wales agrees. Premier Gladys Berejiklian will still welcome South Australians into her state. But the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, told Melbourne's 3AW he expects more border closures.
It does provide that temporary protection. It's important, though, that, as Northern Territory has demonstrated, they put areas of the country, not entire states, on hot spots from time to time, and they quickly take them off again.
With Victoria at 17 days now of zero community transmission, Australia, except WA, was tracking well towards opening up in time for Christmas. It was the plan announced at last week's National Cabinet, but already the tourism industry is nervous. Adelaide Hills winery owner David Bowley has confidence in local health authorities and wants those who can to keep coming.
If concerns exist for us, it is that it's been a relative safe haven here in South Australia. I think there's some complacency in the community, and that's definitely a risk.
Does it worry you that it might put people off, you know, people who might have been planning that interstate trip to South Australia might have a second look at it now?
Oh, I don't think so. I think here in South Australia, people recognise how much space we have. It would be... be a shame if people took this news and decided to cancel trips. I mean, such a contained outbreak.
South Australia's outbreak appears to have started like the one in Victoria, through hotel quarantine for returning overseas travellers. Chair of the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness, Jane Holton, has reviewed the hotel quarantine system and says there is no alternative.
If nothing else, we've got tens of thousands of Australians who want to come home, and we need as many beds as we can get to actually get those Australians home, particularly people who want to come home for reasons of Christmas and family reunion, but also sometimes ill health and family tragedy. The truth is it's about infection control, and it's making sure that everybody who works in that environment is doing everything they can to contain the virus when it's there.
While business argues the opening and shutting of state borders is bad for the economy, health experts agree in many cases it's the best decision. Infectious diseases expert at the Australian National University, Sanjaya Senanayake, doesn't think South Australia needs to impose movement restrictions just yet, but the next few days will be crucial.
Look, unfortunately, only time will tell how big this outbreak is, but also remember that the fact that 17 cases have been identified so quickly also can reflect how well the contact tracers are doing.
The plan is for movement to continue between all states except WA at Christmas time. Is that still something we should be aiming for?
Christmas time is almost 6 weeks away, and we know with COVID that the nature of the beast is to cause sudden sporadic outbreaks. So I think that can be the long-term plan, but we have to be flexible in terms of our thinking, in terms of how this South Australian outbreak goes and whether any other outbreaks occur elsewhere in Australia.
Infectious diseases expert Sanjaya Senanayake, ending Isabel Rowe's report. Australia's peak medical group, the AMA, has added its voice to concerns about ventilation standards in buildings to combat the spread of COVID-19. Infectious diseases experts, engineers and scientists are becoming increasingly vocal about the need for better airflow in enclosed spaces where infected aerosol particles can build up. Emily Burke reports.
There's growing evidence that aerosol transmission of COVID-19 has been responsible for several notable super spreader events. A yodeling festival in Switzerland, a South Korean church gathering, an indoor wedding and a choir rehearsal in the United States, a carnival in Germany, and a bus journey in Hunan, just to name a few.
I don't know how many more examples that we need to learn from.
Mary Louise McClaws is Professor of Epidemiology, Hospital Infection and Disease Control and a member of the WHO's expert panel on COVID.
We've had one outbreak in an abattoir followed by a second and a third one. Then we had the residential aged care facility where there was not enough airflow change as well, and people were kept into the facility who had COVID.
Aerosol scientist Alex Huffman is Associate Professor of Chemistry at Denver University.
When you're changing the physical infrastructure of a building, it can be very costly. In the United States, a lot of our school districts are incredibly strapped for cash and have no resources to upgrade anything. So it's a hard sell to be able to convince people that this is something that's in the best interest of the people involved. So I do think it's absolutely a resource issue. But I also think that it's a leadership issue. If you have leaders that are convinced that this is a critical piece of the puzzle, they will find a way to make it happen.
The president of the Australian Medical Association is Omar Khorshid.
So we are very concerned about the potential for further localised outbreaks in places like hospitals and other indoor facilities. Gyms are another example of a place where we believe aerosol spread is highly likely. We would certainly support reviewing national standards around ventilation of public places so that we can reduce the spread of future pandemics like this COVID-19 pandemic.
Would that be a decision made at a national cabinet level? I mean, how would you kind of mandate that across all indoor settings?
Yeah, the first step is to gather the science. And once that science is very clear and there is consensus, then it's a matter of changing standards. It may be building codes. It may be industry-specific quality and safety standards. It may be around workplace safety.
The World Health Organization is now recommending increasing ventilation rates with natural or mechanical methods and limiting air recirculation as part of the layered approach to preventing COVID. And the US Federal Occupational Health and Safety Agency has issued new advice urging employers to optimise building ventilation in workplaces. But it's an issue in Australia too.
As long as people believe washing their hands and staying 1.5 metres away is going to keep them safe, they're working on wrong information. This is all about ventilation. Audit and improve ventilation systems in public and private spaces.
Dr. David Berger is a UK-trained GP who's been working in remote and regional Australia and advocating on behalf of frontline healthcare workers.
So we're in a situation now where the evidence is running ahead of the guidelines setting groups. It's a bit like trying to turn an oil tank around. It takes a lot of sea room to do that. Now, in normal times, in inverted commas, that isn't such a problem. But actually, this is really urgent.
But engineer and occupational hygienist Kate Cole says the issue goes beyond the health sector.
Whether it's a hospital, an aged care facility, an office complex, a school, everyone should be looking at what can they do to increase the amount of fresh air, remove the amount of contaminated air, and increase the volume of air going into their spaces.
And she says the precautionary principle should be applied.
It's all about not having to wait for 100% certain evidence to act and to protect people, but it's about applying all reasonably practicable measures to keep people safe in their workplace and not wait for peer-reviewed scientific evidence to come out, which might take 6 to 12 months, and it's just too late by that time.
That's occupational hygienist Kate Cole. Emily Burke with that report. On ABC Radio across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. Thanks for your company. Well, overseas now, and US President Donald Trump has doubled down on his refusal to concede defeat in the presidential election and continued his false claims that the poll was rigged. He caused a flurry of speculation when he appeared to acknowledge for the first time that President-elect Joe Biden had indeed won, but he soon retracted, tweeting, "I concede nothing." Rachel Mealy reports.
In the 12 days that have passed since the presidential election, it was an early morning tweet from Donald Trump which caught the eye of Washington watchers. "He won because the election was rigged," it began. It went on to list the ways in which President Trump believes the election was rigged. But it was those two words, "he won," which became the subject of much discussion. Was Donald Trump finally conceding defeat?
It's the first time he said he won. In our own reporting, we've asked an official and said, is this the closest we're going to get to the President Trump admitting that Joe Biden won? And we were told yes, and that this is the beginning of a concession process. Do you accept that as sort of step one here?
It didn't take long for the president to end the speculation in another tweet. "He only won in the eyes of the fake news media," he said. "I concede nothing. We have a long way to go. This was a rigged election." President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, was sent forth to explain the president's meaning.
Is the president right now in this tweet conceding this election?
No, far from it. What he's saying is more, I guess you'd call it sarcastic or a comment on the terrible times in which we live, in which the media has said he won. But by going on to point out that it was illegal, obviously he's contesting it vigorously in the courts.
But while the stoush continues, more and more Republicans are coming out to have their voices heard. The Republican governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, is the latest senior Republican to say enough is enough.
It was good, actually, to see President Trump tweet out that he won. I think that's the start of an acknowledgement. And it is very important that Joe Biden have access to the intelligence briefings to make sure that he is prepared. During times of transition, our enemies have an opportunity to try to take advantage of us. We want to make sure that there is a smooth transition.
Former National Security Advisor John Bolton went one further, calling on Republican leaders to start to reverse the president's misinformation.
Well, I think it's very important for leaders of the Republican Party to explain to our voters, who are not as stupid as the Democrats think, that in fact Trump has lost the election and that his claims of election fraud are baseless. The fact is that we've seen litigation in all the key battleground states, and it has failed consistently. Right now, the Trump campaign is doing the legal equivalent of pitching pennies. Where are their silver dollars? Where is the evidence?
Donald Trump hit back quickly in a tweet, calling John Bolton one of the dumbest people he's worked with and a dope. At Joe Biden's HQ, the work on addressing the coronavirus crisis continues. The US has now passed 11 million cases, with close to 160,000 cases registered in the past day. Joe Biden's chief of staff, Ron Klain, says he's becoming concerned that the distribution of a vaccine may be caught up in President Trump's delaying tactics.
We now have the possibility, we need to see if it gets approved, of a vaccine starting perhaps in December, January. Right. There are people at HHS making plans to implement that vaccine. Our experts need to talk to those people as soon as possible so nothing drops in this change of power we're going to have on January 20th.
That's Joe Biden's chief of staff, Ron Klain, ending Rachel Mealy's report. The corporate regulator ASIC has raised concerns that some consumers are being harmed by increasingly popular buy now, pay later products. ASIC says one in five borrowers in the schemes are missing payments and some are even cutting back on meals or taking on new loans to service their debt. For the latest, I was joined a short time ago by our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Peter, good afternoon. This report has been highly anticipated by the buy now, pay later sector, and it's not good news, especially in the lead up to Christmas. Tell us some more about it.
Well, that's right, Sally. The amount of credit extended by the sector has almost doubled
in the past 12 months, up to $32 million. But the amount of fees for missed credit payments has also surged, up 38%, totaling $43 million for the six big players reviewed, including the likes of Afterpay and Zip. Now, this report from ASIC says one in five users are missing their payments and financially struggling. 20% are cutting back on essentials like meals, 15% taking out additional loans to cover the debt, even resorting to payday lenders. Now, ASIC says policy and regulation is a matter for government. They make no recommendations for a crackdown, but this is a hot issue given that buy now, pay later firms aren't currently regulated under the Credit Act. Fiona Guthrie, Chief Executive of Financial Counselling Australia, told me ASIC's findings match the real distress that she sees from consumers overwhelmed by their debt, and that tougher regulation is now needed.
This is causing real harm to people, and we are seeing this every day in financial counselling.
And taking out payday loans, that's perhaps the most dangerous debt you could have.
Well, what this is doing is trapping people in a cycle of debt. It has detrimental impacts on people's relationships, on their health. The government needs to act now. Instead, what we are seeing is the government winding back responsible lending obligations, even for our existing lenders. This is just unbelievable.
That's Fiona Guthrie, Chief Executive of Financial Counselling Australia. So Peter, how has the buy now, pay later sector responded to these warnings from ASIC?
Well, Sally, the Financial Industry Association, which covers the sector, says it's working with ASIC on a code of practice to lift industry standards. That code is due to be released in March. Chief Executive Diane Tate said in a statement that the industry is focused on protecting vulnerable consumers while broadening consumer choice. In a separate statement, Zip says late fees are a tiny part of its model, covering less than 1% of its revenue, and that it doesn't rely on customers falling behind due to its economics.
That's Peter Ryan, our senior business correspondent. Well, with thousands of job cuts and a large part of its fleet grounded, it's not the ideal way for Qantas to celebrate its birthday. But the world's oldest operating airline is still marking 100 years in the air, with CEO Alan Joyce insisting that 60% of its fleet is likely to be back in business by Christmas. For long-serving staff, it's a chance to look back at some of the extraordinary changes in aviation over the decades, as Stephanie Smale reports.
When Annie Oding started as a flight hostess with Qantas in 1970, the rules were clear.
We all looked like little clones, I think. If we had long hair, we had to tuck it under a wig. You could be engaged, but you could not be married. But that was all part of the equal opportunity win, that we were allowed to stay in after 35, we were allowed to be married. It was all a case of job performance, and that's what it should have been related on from the first part.
Annie Oding was one of the women who battled for equal opportunity at Qantas in the mid-1980s and won, giving them the right to progress their careers to supervisory and management roles. Her career spanned 30 years of change, including a much-welcomed smoking ban.
Hideous. Hideous, hideous, hideous. We were constantly, to use an analogy, putting out fires, I suppose you'd say. You'd have people sitting, 2 foot away from a smoker, and they were supposedly in the demarcation line between the smoking zone and the non-smoking zone. And then, of course, when smoking was banned, you had the odd person that would hop in and try and have one in the aircraft toilets. Well, of course, they had smoke detectors. It's amazing what we put up with. And we saw ground engineers show us panels. And this is quite revolting, full of tar.
Over decades, the airline has carried Australian sporting teams across the world. Annie Oding says she worked out some crowd control skills early on in her career.
Tales of cricketers and football and beer contests between here and London are not legendary, they're true.
Annie Oding says the current uncertainty for Qantas and other airline staff is hard to witness.
I left of my own free will, but these kids were still in the stage where I was still really up to my neck enjoying the job, and they've got these uncertain futures. And to think that, a beautiful airline that had everything going for it was suddenly disintegrating in front of our eyes.
Since the coronavirus pandemic hit, grounding the majority of the airline, thousands of jobs have been cut at Qantas. Alan Joyce says it depends when the borders open up, but he's hoping for a major recovery by Christmas.
Qantas has survived 100 years because we've adapted to the environment that we've been in at the time. I want to make sure that this great, iconic brand survives the next 100 years, and that means making tough decisions and the heartbreaking decisions. Some of my friends have had to leave this company. I don't like doing that, but I know to make sure this icon survives, their decisions that are needed, and unfortunately we have to do this to get the company through this.
That's Qantas CEO Alan Joyce ending Stephanie Smale's report. And that's all from the World Today team for this Monday. Linda Mottram and the PM team will be along this evening. Thanks for your company. I hope you can join us again at the same time tomorrow. I'm Sally Sara. Stay safe and enjoy your afternoon.
Hi, I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal.
It's been clear for more than a week that Donald Trump lost the US election, but he still hasn't acknowledged the fact. On the contrary, he's actively denying it, and he's doing some things that a president who's just lost an election would never normally do, firing a handful of top defence and intelligence officials and replacing them with loyalists.
Today on The Signal, the Trump reaction to losing so far. Is it a serious attempt to hang on to power, or something else altogether? Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.